Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 60, Chapter entitled Krishna Teases Rukmini, text number 46. Astu.
Astu.
Ambujaksha.
No, it's not
46.
Yeah, the one that's like Shiva, Ambujaksha, Sam, Yezja.
It's definitely 49. Okay. Sri Bhagavan Uvarcha.
Sri Bhagavan Uvarcha.
Asadvi.
Asadvi.
Etach.
Etach.
Shrotu.
Shrotu.
Kamais.
Kamais.
Twam.
Twam.
Rajaputri.
Rajaputri.
Pralambita.
Pralambita.
Mayoditam.
Mayoditam.
Yad anvata,
yad anvata
sarvam,
sarvam
tat,
tat
satyam,
satyam
eva,
eva
hi,
hi.
Shri Bhagavan uvacha,
Shri Bhagavan uvacha
sadve tachtro tu kamaistvam,
sadve tachtro tu kamaistvam
Rajaputri pralambita.
Rajaputri pralambita.
Mayoditam yad anvata.
Mayoditam yad anvata.
Sarvam tat satyam evahi.
Sarvam tat satyam evahi.
Sadve tat shrotu kamaistvam.
Sadve tat shrotu kamaistvam.
Rajaputri pralambita.
Rajaputri pralambita.
Mayoditam yad anvata.
Mayoditam yad anvata.
Sarvam tat satyam evahi.
Sarvam tat satyam evahi.
Sadve tachtro tu kamaistvam.
Sadve tachtro tu kamaistvam.
Rajaputri pralambita.
Rajaputri pralambita.
Mayoditam yad anvata.
Mayoditam yad anvata.
Sarvam tat satyam evahi.
Sarvam tat satyam evahi.
Translation and purports by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. The Supreme Lord said, O saintly lady, O princess, we deceived you only because we wanted to hear you speak like this. Indeed, everything you said in reply to my words is most certainly true. Translation responsibly. The Supreme Lord said,
The Supreme Lord said,
O saintly lady,
O saintly lady,
O princess,
O princess,
we deceived you only because we wanted to hear you speak like this.
We deceived you only because we wanted to hear you speak like this.
Indeed.
Indeed.
Everything you said in reply to my words.
Everything you said in reply to my words.
Is most certainly true.
Is most certainly true.
Text 50. Whatever benedictions you hope for in order to become free of material desires are ever yours. O fair and noble lady, for you are my unalloyed devotee. Text 51. O sinless one, I have now seen firsthand the pure love and chaste attachment you have for your husband, even though, shaken by my words, your mind could not be pulled away from me. Purport. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti quotes the following verse describing the pure love between Rukmini and Krishna. Savata dvamsa rahitam satyapi dvamsa karane yadbhava bantanam yuno suprema parikiratita. When the affectionate bond between a young man and a young woman can never be destroyed, even when there is every cause for the destruction of that relationship, The attachment between them is said to be pure love. This is the nature of the eternal loving affairs between Lord Krishna and his pure conjugal associates. Omagyan tilandasya ginanjana shalakaya chakshirin rilitam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha. Shri Chaitanya manovishtam stapitam yena bhutale swayam rupa kadamayam dadati svapadantikam. Vancha kalpatarubhyascha kripa sindubhyevacha petitanam pavanebhyo vaishnavebhyo namonamaha. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityanando Shri Advaita Gadadhara Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes that the difference between love and lust, which means in Sanskrit, what is the word for love? Prema. And what is the word for lust in Sanskrit? Calm. Like that. So the difference between lust and love is described in Chaitanya Charitamrita to be like the difference between gold and iron. Like that. Gold is the most pure and valuable of all metals. Like that. But iron is not considered to be of great value. It is very base. It is very common. Like that. So, lust is considered to be very low class. And gold, or love for Krishna, is considered to be the most purest thing. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami said, the love of the gopis of Vrindavan, who are considered to be the topmost devotees in the Lord's creation, the love of the gopis is said to be like gold which has been purified in 1,000 fires. It is pure love, free from any other adulteration or motivation, any other type of desire. So, in order to get to the platform of this type of love, can require a great deal of penance and austerity. It is not easy to develop this type of love for Krishna. Pure, unmotivated love for Krishna, which is free from other contaminations. This is Rupa Goswami's definition of pure love for Krishna. Anyabhilashita shunyam gyanakamadya navritam. That is the first part of pure love or pure devotion or bhakti. It must be free from other things. Then it can be considered pure. Anyabhilashita shunyam. Shunya means... anyone knows this word? Shunya. Shunyavad. That was a... Shunya means void, devoid of, without, like that. So, anyabhilashita shunyam. Bhakti or devotion to Krishna must be free of other desires, right? It is not that, but this is an important point which is made by Jiva Goswami, which is made by the Acharyas. It is not that bhakti is free from desires. It's not like we do not desire. The common concept of spiritual life at this point in time is that if you go around and ask people in the world today, they say that, and this is the philosophy of Buddhism, which is Shunyavad philosophy, spiritual life means you must not have any desire. Right? There must be no desire. That is spiritual. You know, you're very spiritual when you don't have any desires. Just like you meet people these days in the New Age scene, and you know, they talk about having no desires. You know, we just have to have nothing, no desires. Right? And they give you very esoteric looks. You know, they kind of give you very looks like, you know. Yeah, no desires. Just have no desire. Yeah, whatever that means. So this is the concept, you know, have no desire. But there's no such thing as no desire. Krishna says in the third chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, you cannot stop desiring even for one moment. So what is the question of no desire? Right? What is the question? There's no question. God himself, I mean, they don't believe in God, but or they think God is, you know, they are God or whatever they think. But God himself says it is not possible to stop desiring, even for one moment. Right? There's the nature of the soul to have desire. So anyabhilashita shunyam. When it says shunyam, it says you're devoid of desires. It cannot mean no desire, because then that would not be correct. That's not Krishna's philosophy. That's not the nature of reality or the soul. So therefore, when Rupa Goswami says anyabhilashita shunyam, he means you must be free of material desires. It cannot be spiritual desires. Spiritual desires must be there. It's the nature of the soul to have spiritual desires. Right? Just like we look at Radha Balabha or Gaur Nitya, Jagannath Balaram Subhadra. Desires should flood your heart. Oh, I wish I could offer them a new garland. I wish I could make them a beautiful garland. I wish I could cook a beautiful offering for them. Right? I wish I could grind the sandalwood pulp, which then I can place upon their lotus heads and their lotus feet. I wish I can do service for them. That's desire. So what is the question of no desire? Rupa Goswami says, it's not that we don't want to have desire, we just don't want to have any desire which is separate from service to Krishna. That's the point. It is not that there should not be desire, but any desire which is separate from service to Krishna, that must be rejected. That's what Rupa Goswami is explaining. So, Jiva Goswami gives a nice example. He says that if a devotee's life is in danger, then what do we usually do? Just say we step out from behind a car and then suddenly there's a big truck coming at us. Then what do?
Call out Krishna.
Call out Krishna. Yeah, that's very good. Hopefully you say that. If you say something else, that's not very good. Hopefully you say Krishna, like that. So, what's the desire that comes at that moment? To escape death. Yeah, to save your life. In other words, to save your material body. Right? So that would be seen as being something separate. We would think, oh, that is something separate from devotional service. Because Rupa Goswami says, you should not have any desire which is separate from service to Krishna. So at that point in time, you may say, Krishna, save me. You know, I don't want to die, right? Because you're attached to your body. That's natural. Everyone's attached to their body. Because in the spiritual world, we also have a body. And obviously you're attached to that body, right? It's a nature, but because we have this material body, we become attached to this body. So, Jiva Goswami says, that is not wrong. He says, even though technically speaking, it is not a pure spiritual desire because you're praying for the protection of your material body. So you cannot say it's a pure spiritual desire, but he says it is not contrary to pure devotional service because you're going to use that material body to serve Krishna. That's the point. So therefore it is not devoid of pure devotional service. So it doesn't mean that we stop desiring, but the desires must be in connection to Krishna. If your desires are not in connection to Krishna, then we have to analyze what is the nature of our desires. So, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, then Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains the definition of lust. What is the definition of lust or kaam?
Seeing one as your enjoyment, something for you to enjoy.
Yeah. This is called Atmendriya Priti. Atma, Indriya, Priti. What is Indriya?
Senses.
Your senses, right? Atma Indriya means your senses, right? Atma Indriya Priti, right? That is called kaam, that is lust. It is for my senses, right? In your consciousness, if any time during today, if you see anything in this world and you think, that is meant for my senses, for the enjoyment of my senses, that is lust. And that lust is what covers our consciousness and keeps us separate from Krishna. Right? Because in the pure spiritual state of consciousness, there is no such thing as lust. What is the definition of love or prema, which Krishnadas Kaviraj gives in the Chaitanya Charitamrita? How do we define love or prema, spiritual love for Krishna?
Direction for Krishna.
Yeah, in direction for Krishna.
Devotion to Krishna.
Service to Krishna.
The opposite of lust, wanting to give that person pleasure.
Yeah, very good. So, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says, Krishnendriya Priti. Krishna, Indriya Priti. Krishna also has senses. Right? If you look at Krishna, he has everything that we have. We have eyes. Why do we have eyes? Because he has eyes. Why do we have skin? Because he has skin. Why do we have ears and tongue and nose? Right? Because he has. That's why we have it. So if we have senses, right? He has senses also, right? And or the proper way to understand it is we have senses because he has senses. He has a form, vigraha, such chit ananda vigraha. He has a form made of eternality, of knowledge, and of bliss. So he has senses. He wants to enjoy his senses. So love means that I only act for the pleasure of Krishna's senses. I want to give pleasure to Krishna's senses. And Krishna's senses are very powerful. Krishna has a very strong enjoying spirit. You know? Just like in Vrindavan, sometimes at Nandagram, there are pastimes which take place. And it is said that when Krishna appeared in this world, then Garga Muni, Garga Rishi, he came and he calculated Krishna's astrological chart, right, as we do when someone is born. So he looked at Krishna's chart, and what did he say about this person? What did Garga Muni say when he looked at Krishna's chart? He said, "This is God." He said, "You know, look at this person. This is the supreme personality of Godhead, right? It's not a conditioned soul. This is a liberated personality. This is the supreme Narayan, right? The supreme personality of Godhead, right?" And he said, in different yugas, in different births previously, he has different forms or different colored forms. So, when Krishna began to grow up, many super extraordinary pastimes took place. Right? Right? Who was the first demon who came into Vrindavan?
Putana.
Putana. Right? And what form did she take?
Demoness.
Demoness, but what form did she take when she came into?
Nurse.
Yeah, she was nurse, like that beautiful. So beautiful, they thought she was maybe an incarnation of Lakshmi. Right? So she took the beautiful form of a beautiful nurse, beautiful woman, and very carefully walked into the palace, into the inner chambers of Maharaj Nanda Maharaj's palace, to go to where Krishna was being kept. Actually, she's a Rakshasi, a demon. Right? She was a witch, very ugly form. But she took this beautiful form, and she charmed everyone, and she walked into the middle, and she took Krishna upon her lap, and she looked at him, and she thought, "I will smear." She smeared poison on her breast, and she said, "Now I will breastfeed this child and I will kill him with this poison." But when she picked him up and she looked at his face and he looked up at her, she understood, this is the supreme personality of Godhead. Right? And now it's a bit late. It wasn't too late, but she thought, "Now it's a bit late, I have to try to kill him. But I have a feeling things are going to turn out a little differently to what I've planned." Right? So she put Krishna to her breast, and Krishna looked up, and then he closed his eyes, and then sucked out her life air, right? And then she began to feel her life being sucked out. So then she ran outside with Krishna, you know, still carrying Krishna. She ran outside, and then she turned into her normal form, 12 miles long, right? Huge demoness, turned into this huge demon, and Krishna sucked out all of her life, and she fell on the ground dead. So if that happened to your kid, okay, you would be, you know, thinking, well, this is not an ordinary child, you know. And everyone ran outside to look for Krishna, and Krishna was just playing on her chest, right? Just a little baby, just laying there playing. So they took Krishna and they thought, what is this? What happened? Ah, Vishnu, Vishnu, Narayan, you have protected our son. They don't think Krishna is God. They think he is protected by God, by Narayan. So they said, Narayan, please protect. And then they took cow dung, cow dust, urine, smeared Krishna, right? Made everything pure, chanted mantras, put tilak on, chanted mantras, and Narayan, please protect, please protect. So then, what was the second demon who came? That was number three. Who was number? There's one. Shakata. Shakata means cart demon, right? So Putana came in the form of the witch. So then Shakata thought, I cannot come in a human form. I have to come in the form of some object. Because Putana already came as a human form and Krishna detected and killed her. So I will come as an object, a cart. So he took the form of the cart and Krishna was 1 year old. It was Krishna's birthday and there was a big festival in Nandagram for Krishna's birthday, and because Krishna was a little 1 year old baby and he was tired, Mother Yashoda put him underneath the cart to rest out of the hot sun. But then the cart then thought, now I'm on top of Krishna, I will fall down and crush Krishna, right, and kill Krishna. Big cart full of many pots and things like that, I will come down and crush the baby. But Krishna looked up and he said, oh, this is not a cart, this is a demon. Right? So with his little foot, he was only a little 1 year old, with his foot and kicked the cart, and the cart exploded all over the place. Right? Killed the demon. Right? Another one. So then, killed the demon. And then, everyone came running. What has taken place? What has taken place? Vishnu, Vishnu, Narayan. Save the baby. Like that. And then, you know, chanting mantras and everything like that. And then the third demon came. Third demon was called? Trinavata. Trinavata means whirlwind. Came in a Vrindavan. So Putana took the human form. The Sakadasura took the form of the cart. So then Trinavata thought, let me take the form of the whirlwind. Because then no one can see me. I'm wind. You can't see the wind. Right? So I'm very subtle. No one will detect me. So Trinavata started coming towards Vrindavan. And then Krishna was laying on the lap of Mother Yashoda, and then Krishna knew that Trinavata was coming. So then Krishna made himself very heavy like a mountain. And Mother Yashoda was holding him, and she thought, I can't hold him anymore, he's too heavy. So she put him on the ground, and at that time Trinavata flew into Vrindavan. And he just made everything, all the dust and all the leaves and everything in Vrindavan, everything just swelled up, and you couldn't even see in front of your face. Right? The storm was so intense, you couldn't even see anything. So Mother Yashoda began to cry, Krishna, Krishna, because she couldn't see where Krishna was anymore. And everyone in Vrindavan was running around looking for Krishna, because he was only like 1 or 2 years old. And then Krishna, Trinavata picked him up and flew him up into the sky. So then Krishna was riding on his back, and Krishna was enjoying the ride. Krishna was flying around the sky on the back of this demon. And he's just a little baby. He thought, this is great fun. Right? So then Trinavata was trying to grab Krishna off his back, you know, to kill him, right? And Krishna was just riding on his back, enjoying it. And then Krishna thought, okay, we've had enough fun. Now let's kill him. Right? So then Krishna made his body as heavy as a mountain. And Trinavata, he was trying to hold Krishna. He's a very powerful demon, but he was so heavy, he just crashed to the ground, right? And Krishna crushed him on the rocks, right, as he hit the ground, right then. So then all the wind died down and everyone ran and Krishna's laying on the back of this demon once again. So everyone started saying, Vishnu, Vishnu, you've got to say, who is this child? So this happened and it kept happening and kept happening and kept happening. Pralamba, Vyoma, Baka, Keshi, Arista, right? All these demons just kept coming into Vrindavan. Krishna killed all of them. Prabhupada says that Krishna would generally kill 3 or 4 demons before lunch. Yeah, before we have our lunch. What did you do today? Yeah, kill 3 or 4 demons. Yeah. So this was Krishna's pastimes. So after some time in Nandagram, then the Brijbasis, they said to Nanda Maharaj, they said, we have to consider this boy very carefully. Because this boy is not an ordinary boy. All these extraordinary things keep happening. And we've even heard that he may even be God himself. He may even be Narayan himself. He may be a very great personality. So they said to Nanda Maharaj, we think you have to be very careful how you deal with him from now on. Sometimes you chastise him. Sometimes you punish him. Sometimes you speak very strong words to him because he is your son. But I think you have to be very careful from now on. All the bridge buses were saying this to Nanda Maharaj. Because we think he's not an ordinary person. He may even be God himself. So when they said that he may even be God himself, Nanda Maharaj just began to laugh. And he just laughed and he just laughed and he laughed. He said, how can he be God? How is it possible he is God? He said, this boy, even great yogis or great brahmanas, great rishis, they take vows of truth. Satyam. Always speak truth. Never tell lies. But this boy cannot speak truth. Every day he is telling lies. We ask him all the time, right? Did you steal the butter? He said, no. Right? They said, well, Nick, the gopis in the village say that you came and stole the butter from their house. And Krishna says, I wasn't even in the area. So he's always telling lies. They all know. And stealing. Stealing is not considered to be a pious activity. It's a sinful activity. But Krishna is very famous as Makkan Chora. Chora means thief. Right? Always stealing. Cannot control his senses. Right? Has no sense control. Right? Devotees can control their senses. Yogis can control their senses. Right? Brahmanas, rishis can. Sages can. Krishna has no sense control. Right? Always stealing. Always running into the gopis' houses. It says in the 10th canto in the Bhagavatam in the Krishna book, he runs into the house of the gopis, sneaks in, and he gets into the center, and sometimes they know he's coming, so they put the makkhan, the butter, or the yogurt, very high on the ceiling. They hang it from the ceiling very high so Krishna can't get to it. So Krishna stacks up the barrels so he can get up and get it. And if he can't get it, he gets very angry. And he gets the old pots and he smashes them on the ground. And then he passes water on the floor. And as he's leaving, he pinches their babies. He pinches their babies in their cot. As he's leaving, makes them cry, and then he leaves the house. Does this sound like a very elevated person? Does this sound like God? So this is Krishna. So Nanda Maharaj said, and you think this is the God? He said, he is my son. And he said, at night time, when there is lightning, he runs into my room and jumps into my bed and hides under the sheets. Right? And you say, this is God? This cannot be God. Nanda Maharaj is just laughing. He said, this cannot be God. He is my son and I will chastise him. And then everyone in Vrindavan just started... everyone just started laughing. No one could believe that they'd even consider that he was God. So the point is that he has senses. Just like we have senses, he also has. And his senses are very powerful. And when he's a young boy, he has a very difficult time controlling them. Just like we have trouble controlling our senses, he has trouble controlling his. His senses are very strong, like that. Actually, he has control of them. Because this is one of his opulences, vairagya. Vairagya means renunciation. He has total control of the senses. But in relation to the spiritual energy, right, Krishna is very attracted to the spiritual energy. And with his senses, he likes to enjoy. He's the Purush. He likes to enjoy the spiritual energy. So, Krishna only uses his senses in contact with the spiritual energy. He never uses his senses in contact with Maya. Krishna has no desire to enjoy Maya. He only wants to enjoy the internal energy. And as devotees, then this is what it means. This is the definition of prema or love. Prema means we only want to use our senses in service of the spiritual energy. If we use our senses in the service of the material energy, that is called
lust,
kama, like that. So if you want to enjoy sense gratification for yourself, that is lust. But prema means it must be done for Krishna's pleasure. Now it says here, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur quotes in the purport, he says, When the affectionate bond between a young man and a young woman can never be destroyed, even when there is every cause for the destruction of that relationship, the attachment between them is said to be pure love. Right? There's no such thing as pure love in this material world. Right? And you'll see, especially now, because now we're living in a very special time. What is the time we're living in now called?
Kali Yuga.
Kali Yuga. Right, that age. Yuga means age. Kali means?
Darkness.
Black. Yeah, Kali means black. Like that. In the first age, it is called Satya Yuga. Satya is compared to be like the golden age. And then you have Treta Yuga. Treta is said to be like the silver age. And then you have Dwapara Yuga. And Dwapara is said to be like the bronze age. You know, bronze and silver and gold considered to be valuable. And then you come to this age, it is called the age of Kali.
Iron.
Iron age. Right? Once again, iron is not considered so valuable. And iron is, everything is made of iron now. Like that. Just like, you know, at the moment we're staying half the week down at New Nundagram. There's no iron there. Not so much. You know, wherever you look, there is nature. Right, trees, forest, animals. We have a pet emu now on the farm. One emu walked from the forest into the farm last week. Beta Priya is in ecstasy. She has someone to associate with. Spends half a day talking to the emu. I think that's strange, but anyway. So it is very natural there. It's not iron. And then as soon as we begin to drive back towards the city, and then you come and everything starts turning into iron. This is Kali. Right? And then by the time you get to the city, you go over the Westgate Bridge, the whole thing's made of iron. Right? And then what do you see when you get to the top of the Westgate Bridge? You just see iron, just buildings. That's Kali Yuga. Right? No wonder people's minds are so disturbed if you're living in that environment. That's not very pleasant. There's only one reason why we stay here, is to preach. Right? That's why the temple's here. That's not why the temple's not in Alice Springs. Right. It's also too hot there. But that's the reason why we stay in the cities, to preach. Otherwise, there's no reason to stay in the city. Right? It's just Iron Age. And what else is Kali known for? Kali is Dark Age. It is the age of quarrel and
hypocrisy.
Every relationship in Kali Yuga is based on these two elements. Right? It's based on quarrel and hypocrisy. Right? There's practically not a relationship that you have in the material world where there's not some quarrel taking place, right? Where people aren't arguing. Right? People are constantly arguing with each other, right? It's very humorous. Sometimes, like, you might be in your car and you're driving down the road and then you look on the side of the road and when, in terms of body language, when someone says something to you, 7% of what we take from the people, when someone communicates to you, 7% of what we take is what they actually say. And then something 20-something percent, I can't remember the exact figure, 28% or something, but you know, 20-something percent, is how they say it. In other words, the way they say the words, the connotation or the tone of voice they use. And then 60-something percent, I can't remember, but most of what we take is the body language. Right? So it's very humorous sometimes. Sometimes we're driving down the road and we look on the side of the road and there's a man and woman there who obviously have a conjugal relationship. They're married or boyfriend, girlfriend or something. And you can just tell by the body language that they're having an argument. You know, the man's walking about 5 feet ahead of the woman, right? And she's saying something to him and she's obviously very frustrated and he's, you know, pretending he's not listening or something like that. Right? You can't even hear what's going on. But you know there's a quarrel there. And this is common, right, in Kali Yuga. There's always quarrels. And why is there quarrels? Because there is hypocrisy. Hypocrisy means that people are hypocritical. They will say one thing, but they will do the other. And because of that hypocrisy, which lies in every relationship, especially in this day and age, then that is why there is quarrel. Right? Because people, they say, yes, they say one thing, but no, they do the other. Right, it becomes more and more common these days. We can't trust people. Just like now, they did a study in Australia of Australian politics. But this study you can take for the whole world. You don't have, just have to take it for Australia. And the very learned professors in the university, they did a study, and they said that we have concluded that no one trusts politicians anymore. How much money they got paid to work that one out, I don't know. They said no one trusts politicians anymore. Right? They said this is a big problem. Right? Why? Because it's all hypocrisy. You know, whatever they say, they're not going to keep their promise. Right? Everyone just knows. That's just taken for granted. Right? We don't trust in it. Practically in every relationship in the material world, there's always that element of hypocrisy. You don't know if you can trust someone. Right? So that's why the relationships in this age, it's why it's known as the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. Just like in marriage, when you get married, just like in Vedic marriages, it's a little different. In Vedic marriages, we have a different concept. We may not stay, the husband and wife may not stay together until death do we part. Right? I remember when I got married here in the temple, I was sitting about here actually, and Aniruddha Prabhu was sitting there, and we have the Jagya Pit here. And then Aniruddha Prabhu said, you know, the vows, and he said, you know, Veda Priya, do you accept Keshava as your master, and you always do whatever he says, and you always listen to him, and you worship his lotus feet, and all this. So she said all those things, and she said, I do. Like that. Actually, it wasn't exactly like that. And she wouldn't have said, I do. Because it's Kali Yuga, even if she said that. So, and then they said, and then Aniruddha said, and Keshava, do you take Veda Priya? Will you look after her? Will you cherish her? Will you look after her? Like that. And then I said, until I take sannyas. Like that. And all the devotee women went, they couldn't believe I said that. Until I take sannyas. But that is our concept within our tradition, within our Vedic culture. The husband and wife may stay together until they die. That may be the way it is, but it may not be also. There is separation in our culture. Vanaprastha and sannyas, those things do exist. So, but in modern, what we call modern Christian marriages, if you go to church and you have a marriage, then usually they have this line, until death do we part. Right? But that's just hypocrisy. Right? Because in America, the divorce rate is something like 50% at the moment. Within the first 2 years of marriage. And they actually keep the place where you get married, like the office, the government department for marriage, they also have marriage, death and divorce in the same place. Right? Because it's much more convenient that way. Right? Because if you get married and you want to get divorced, right, it's very convenient because you can just go to the next floor and then say, oh, sorry, I made a mistake. It's very common these days, and this is all based on hypocrisy. So, this is the nature of this world, and Prabhupada said, in the very early days of ISKCON, Prabhupada said this movement will only go on by love and trust. In other words, devotees, we have to learn, even though we're contaminated, and we have this conditioning from the past, that we come from the same material society as everyone else. By the process of purification, by the process of bhakti yoga, we have to learn to purify our consciousness so we're not hypocritical. Right? And so we don't quarrel with others. So we don't get influenced by the age of Kali. Right? Prabhupada said the movement must be based on love and trust. Which means that we have to be able to trust devotees. Not that devotees are being duplicit with each other or being hypocritical with each other. Well, we'll say one thing to them, but then actually we will do another thing. That's when quarrel enters our movement. Prabhupada said nothing can stop ISKCON from the outside, only from the inside can it be disrupted. And how does it get disrupted? When the devotees, they say one thing to another, but then they don't keep their promises. And then quarrel comes, right? Because everyone becomes disappointed with the leaders, become disappointed with the management, become disappointed with the other devotees in the ashram. Right, and then Kali has entered and everything becomes weakened like that. So it must be a different concept. So we don't find this in the material world. Right? Only amongst devotees will you find this concept. In the material world, you won't find this. But in the temple should be like, Prabhupada says, like a Vaikuntha, like Satyayuga. It means that the devotees should be dealing with each other with great love and great trust. And if the relationship is like that, then our temple becomes the spiritual world. It's not the material world anymore. So here it says that in relationship with Krishna and Rukmini, the affectionate bond between the young man and the young woman could never be destroyed. Even when there is every cause for the destruction of that relationship, the attachment between them is said to be pure love. So that is pure love, right? Krishna was giving Rukmini a hard time, but what happened? Right? Rukmini said, I cannot give you up. I will never give you up. Right? And Krishna was saying to Rukmini, why don't you go and marry Shishupal? Right? And Rukmini said, no, I will never give you up. You are my only pati. You are my only lord. There is no one else in my life. Right? And this is the kind of mood that we have to develop towards Krishna. Right? We have the kind of conditioning that if we don't like the relationship, then we just pull out. That's our conditioning in the material world. Right? And that's what happens in this material world now. Right? And in 1973, I think it was, maybe 72, I think it was 73, Srila Prabhupada stopped organising marriages in ISKCON. Right? Because between 66 and 73, Prabhupada would organise marriages between his disciples. He would say, you know, this disciple marries this one marries this one. Like, Prabhupada organised. But he stopped. By 73, he just stopped. He said, no more. Right? Because so many of them were breaking up and divorcing, and Prabhupada said, this is not culture. Right? This is not God. What is this? This is nonsense. This is Kali Yuga. Right? This is just Vanik mentality. You know, you buy it from the shop, you take it home. If you don't like it, you take it back. What's that? You know, it's not like marriage is not like that. Initiation is not like that. Service to Krishna is not like that. Just like one time one disciple said to Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I resign. And Prabhupada said, how do you resign from Krishna's service? How do you resign from your eternal relationship with Krishna? That's what we did. That's why we're in the material world, right? Krishna, I need a break. I need a paid holiday. Right? So I'm just going to go off for a few million lifetimes, and then, you know, when I have my break, then I'll come back. Prabhupada said, how do you resign from Krishna's service? Not possible. Right? You can't stop serving Krishna. That's why every day we chant our rounds, 16 rounds every day. That's why we follow the four regular principles every day. That's why we get up and serve Krishna every day. Right? We don't have holidays. What's our holiday? Our holiday is we go to the Holy Dharm. What do you do when you get to the Holy Dharm? You start chanting 32 rounds. You don't like reduce like that. Okay, devotees need to relax, that's true. Right? We need to relax and we need to have some time off. But we don't stop our devotional activities. Right? So this is the nature of devotional service. So Krishna is glorifying Rukmini because Rukmini did not give up Krishna's service when the going got tough. And that is the test that Krishna puts us through. Sometimes we wonder, why is Krishna putting us through so many tests? Why does he make our life so difficult materially sometimes? Because he's testing, will you give up my service? Are you going to give up my service even when I make it difficult for you? Just like I see in myself and my own consciousness, I see when things are going very nice, you know, when my life is very peaceful and everything's very nice, then it's very easy to focus on devotional service because your mind's not being disturbed. It's much easier to do devotional service. But then when the disturbances come, it's much harder to fix the mind on Krishna. Because then you start thinking about the problems, then you start thinking, I wish the problems weren't there. And you start saying to Krishna, you know, please take the problems away. You know, we may say all these kind of things. But actually, this is when the Krishna is seeing, this is the quality of the relationship. Right? How deep is the attachment, actually? Just like it is said, sandalwood, when you grind sandalwood, the aroma begins to come. When you put some pressure, right? And when you put a lot of pressure, then the aroma becomes very wonderful. So this example is given, this is what it is like for devotees. A devotee, when he's under a lot of pressure, When Krishna puts him through a lot of tests and a lot of tribulation, does his bhakti become sweeter and sweeter and sweeter? Does his devotion become more intense towards Krishna? Does he become more surrendered to Krishna? Usually for myself, when it becomes more intense, right, I go through a period where I lose my focus on Krishna. Right? Not as focused on Krishna. But this is not a high level of bhakti. This is not a pure level of bhakti. Devotion must come to the platform that when we're under very difficult circumstances, we just surrender to Krishna. So, Rukmini, she's glorified here by Krishna because even when she was going through difficulty, her bhakti for Krishna just increased and it melted Krishna's heart. Krishna saw Rukmini has so much attachment to me, even though I am saying these things to her, she's just becoming more attached to me. Right? And then Krishna's heart is melted. So this is the position that we want, and Krishna wants to see this. So we have to learn to pass the tests. Lord Brahma says this in the 14th chapter of the 10th canto. He says that even when there are difficulties, tribulations coming in our life, within the core of our heart, we keep paying our obeisances to Krishna. And we say, Krishna, this is just your mercy upon me. Please, I just want to keep serving you. I just want to keep surrendering to you. Right? And when the tribulations come again and again and again, we just keep offering. And Krishna sees, if a devotee has that attitude, it says, Daya Bhak. Right? He gets his rightful claim of his father's property. In other words, Krishna will take you back to Godhead. When he sees we have that kind of attitude, then he will be allowed to go back to the spiritual world. Right? But if Krishna puts us through tests and then our mind always takes shelter somewhere else, then Krishna can't take us back to Godhead. Right? We haven't passed the test sufficiently yet. And the biggest test in our life will be?
Death.
Yeah, the moment of death. What happens at the moment of death? What will you do then? Will the mind go to Krishna and you'll pray to Krishna? Krishna, I just want to surrender to you. I don't want anything else in this material world. I just want to take shelter of you. Please protect me. Like that. If we take like that, then we go back to Godhead. But at the time of death, if the mind is not trained and we take shelter of something else, then you have to take birth again. You'll be a devotee, but another material birth. And we don't really want too many more material births because we've done this enough, I think. I know personally I'm starting to get some rents. It's funny because you have these realizations, the material world's a place of suffering, but then you're still attached to it. So we have to get to a point where we become so realized and so advanced that we just realize, yes, I want to give up all my attachment to this material world, to this false material energy. So we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Just on the last point that you made, I was up very late this morning, tried to go to sleep, and I just couldn't settle my mind down enough. So I was just thinking, I'm suffering so much. Trying to just go to sleep, and yet, and I'm still so attached to this body that when death comes, I should be able to give this body up so easily because it's such a source of distress. But yet, things come during the day, and then the mind's still attracted to those little different things. It's very subtle, but also it can be so gross. But I should be able to just give this body up easily. Without
any problem,
if we become purified.
Yeah. That's why Krishna begins the Bhagavad Gita on that point. First thing Krishna says is, Na tweva ham jatuna sam nam tum ne me janati baha. Actually, he says before that, Asochanam vasochastvam. While speaking learned words, you're mourning for that which is not worthy of grief. The wise lament neither for the living nor for the dead. Because they're not attached to the material body, first thing that Krishna says. And still, even though that's the first teaching, then we haven't realized that at all. Not first teachings. Any other points?
This is a small thing. Why does Krishna use the plural? Is it agreed that you do?
Which verse is it?
The same one, 49. It's
49. We deceived you only because we wanted to hear you speak like this. I'm not sure.
Maybe the servants were in on it.
Maybe.
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, I'm not sure, because Prabhupada would also say like that. Prabhupada would say we. So I took it that, I take it that when Prabhupada says we, then he means, you know, speaking like I'm the representative of the previous acharyas. So he said we like that, and he would say, I'm not sure why Krishna is saying it. Because Krishna is Krishna, so I'm not sure why he says it. But yeah, it's for some reason it's said like this. We. Yeah, I don't think, yeah, that would not seem logical, because Balaram doesn't have that kind of relationship with Rukmini. Not that, so. Prabhupada spoke like that, like it's, it must be a cultural point, like that. He'd often say we, like that.
So the W is in the big letter, so it refers to him, you know, as Krishna.
Yeah.
It's not a normal, small.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know why they, why the plural is there, I'm not sure. Oh, it is, but Prabhupada, it must be like a Vedic cultural point that you say that. Instead of I, you say we. I think so. The demons.
Yes, in the past time.
The demons are just conditioned souls, and Krishna just uses them to enhance his pastimes. It's like there's always conditioned souls in the material world who are rebelling against God. Just like, you know, we have examples in modern times of demons like Hitler. Right? So Hitler was a demon, or a living entity, a conditioned soul, had a demoniac mentality. And then Krishna takes that jiva. And because there's a mass karma which needs to be delegated at that point in time, there's simple reactions which many conditioned souls need to get. He takes that one jiva who has a demoniac mentality, puts him in that position, and then he is like the cause through him, then all the reactions come like that. So when Krishna comes to the material world, then there's so many conditioned souls who are demoniac. So they take forms of Keshi and Pralambra and Arista and Vyoma and all these different demons. And the Lord allows them to enter his pastimes, right, as very powerful demons, and then he destroys them to show his supreme power. Just like Baka. Baka is the crane demon, or the duck demon, Bakasura. So it describes that when he came into Vrindavan, he took the form of a huge crane, like a duck, and he was touching the clouds. That's how big he was. And Baka was so powerful that even the demigods could not defeat him. That's how powerful he was. So it says that when he came into Vrindavan, the demigods, they all flew down from the heavenly planets on their chariots and so forth, and they began to circumambulate him, and they began to fight with him because they didn't want him to disturb Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. So Indra threw his lightning bolt at him, and, you know, ducks have feathers, so then he burnt all his feathers because he threw the lightning bolt at him to try to kill him. Normally a lightning bolt kills someone, but he's so powerful, all it did was just burn his feathers. So all his feathers, so he just looked like a plucked duck. And then it says Yamaraj hit him with his dunder and then cut off one of his wings, and then one of the other demigods, I can't remember who, but, you know, they were just attacking him, trying to kill him. None of them could kill him. But by the time he got to Krishna, I think he was standing on one leg and he had one wing and didn't have any feathers left. You know, he was just like, and Krishna just looked at him like, you know these guys have really got problems. Yeah, Krishna's just like, I don't know why they do it. You know, they keep coming to Vrindavan, I don't know what they do. So anyway, then Krishna, like, dressed himself, you know, got himself ready like that, And Bhaka came down to bite him, opened up his beaks to bite him, and Krishna caught his beaks, and then he bifurcated him, like, split him in half, just ripped him in, ripped his head in half, and then threw him on the ground. So Krishna, it gives Krishna to show, it gives Krishna an opportunity to show his supreme position. Because there's no one else who can kill these demons. So he shows, I am the supreme entity. But as for their position, they're just conditioned souls who are demons, have a demonic mentality. So Krishna uses them to fulfill a purpose in his pastime. But because Krishna is all good, he is Shuddha, which means he's on the pure spiritual platform, then when he kills them, they get liberation. So it's not that Krishna is merciless or, you know, there's no negative. Whenever someone comes in contact with Krishna, there's no negative outcome. There's only positive outcome, or there's only progress. So when they get killed by Krishna, all of their karma is destroyed and they become liberated. Like that, so.
I would come in while you were talking about Kali Yuga, the hypocrisy. Last Thursday, I was waiting in my car for my wife had gone for a meeting. So next car, there was a young lady, and all the time, she was just crying, and her boyfriend was sitting next to her, and fighting and crying. So what you were saying is exactly right. In Kali Yuga, that's what happens.
It says that if the husband and wife do not quarrel, then Lakshmi comes and stays in that home. Or that home becomes very auspicious if the husband and wife do not quarrel. Practically impossible in Kali Yuga.
I just had a couple of days ago the discussion where Paul comes from, and
yeah, it's like that, but it's ultimately the powers come from Krishna. Like that. That's our philosophical understanding. When a devotee has potency, when a devotee has ability, or the devotee has some shakti, that devotee can achieve something, can do some service for Krishna, that is coming from Krishna. But it is, as it says in the, I think, the fifth canto of the Bhagavatam, tapo divyam, then Rishabdev says that by transcendental austerity, meant for the pleasure of Krishna. So when a devotee performs austerity for Krishna's pleasure, then Krishna reciprocates and he gives devotee empowerment. And then that devotee becomes... So it is true. I mean, there is something on our behalf. But the potency comes from Krishna. Although we don't think it's just from... That's demoniac to think it's just from me, just from my austerities. That's what Krishna says in the 16th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, that the demons think that it is because of me that I've conquered the world. But that's not true. The power comes from Krishna. But the austerity is like, gives us the ability to receive that power. Like that.
So then, first of all, we get through austerities, place demigods which get protection from Krishna to give a particular person the cause.
Yeah, you can say it like that. Any other question or comment?